The Attorney General is our guest today to talk about legislation making its way through Congress to allow better enforcement against fraud and scams. Good morning. Olivia Ebert, our host, and our guest, Attorney General Traig Taylor.
Hi, thank you, Grady. Good morning, and good morning to our guest, Attorney General Taylor. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Good morning, Olivia. Thank you for having me.
So you, as I understand, you've signed on to this support this bill called the Fraud and Scam Reduction Act, which is a bipartisan effort. It sounds like certainly something many people can get behind. It seems like most attorneys general from most of the states have actually signed on to this bill. But what is it exactly?
Yeah, no, it's an important piece of legislation. You know, you mentioned it, 47 state attorneys general support this legislation, and we draft a letter to show our support. But basically, it's a recognition of a growing problem that this fraud and scam is in our nation and in our communities. And because most of the scammers or the bad actors reside outside of the state, for the state of Alaska, for example, and most even reside outside of the country, it has to be addressed at a federal level. Now, certainly there's things in place on a federal level currently to address this, but what this does is it sort of coordinates that effort. You know, the bill sort of does two different things. It creates an Office for the Prevention of Fraud Targeting Seniors, and this provides, you know, it's designed to provide education information on the scams, not only to the seniors that may be targeted, but also their family and the caregivers, because I think that's the first line of defense, right, is family members or caregivers for elderly people that are at risk for succumbing to these types of fraud and scams. That's kind of the first line of defense. But it also monitors new fraud scams and lets people know and educates people about those things. And it provides a mechanism for making complaints to sort of a centralized repository and group that can address those and monitor what is going on throughout the country. The second major thing that it does is it creates this senior scams advisory group, and that's basically it's taking all the federal agencies that deal with scams in some sort of way, and it puts them together. It helps them coordinate, and it also, this group is also has retailers and financial services, banks, for example, and then wire transfer companies, because a lot of times these frauds and these scams can be stopped at that level as this individual goes to make a wire transfer, or this individual goes to their bank and tries to withdraw, you know, a considerable sum of money under suspicious circumstances. And so basically is getting everyone involved, from the chairman of the Federal Trade Commission to the banker to your local grocery store clerk, on preventing these scams against seniors. So and it's a growing problem. Like I mentioned before, we've seen a huge jump in the number of frauds perpetrated this year as compared to last year, for example. I can get into those details if you'd like.
Yeah, I think maybe let's come back to that in a little bit. Is there any branch or section of this bill that also looks at targeting and finding the scammers themselves? I mean, are these scammers sort of generally known as lone actors, or are there groups, or is that something that's still unknown?
Yeah, so this is it's a similar problem to the hacking that we've seen lately, in that a lot of these bad actors reside outside of the United States, overseas, India, Russia, for example. And so it's a very complicated process in holding these scammers accountable oftentimes. And so the focus of this group primarily is the prevention of the fraud itself. And so it's an education. Working with the people that are part of this, like I said before, government agencies, retailers, financial institutions, and wire transfer companies, to make them aware of what's going on so that they can prevent it from happening in the first place.
Mm-hmm. And so as you mentioned, there has been an uptick in the past year. I guess I have a two-part question for you. Have you been tracking exactly how much money has been lost in Alaska, for example? And is that because of the pandemic? Are more people home and answering their phones?
Yeah, no, that's an interesting question. Let me just sort of address. So what we know, and this is just because it's reported, oftentimes the victims of these scams are when they come to a realization that they've been victimized and this was a scam and they just spent a considerable amount of money, they feel sort of a sense of shame. So a lot of this goes unreported. But what we know is that in 2020, there was 4,319 Alaskans that were targeted and succumbed to this type of fraud, the scam. And basically that amounts to about $5.8 million in the state of Alaska. And what we've noticed the uptick to be is considerable. Just in the first 3 months of 2021, we've seen 1,360 Alaskans and a loss of $2.8 million. So that is an exponential uptick from last year. I think it's a number of reasons. I think there is a realization that this is it's hard to prosecute these types of crimes, and so it's profitable for these scammers. So I think we're seeing a growth in the number of people perpetrating these scams, and I think it also probably plays in, we'll have to look at the numbers a little closer, but I think COVID plays a part in this because some of our most vulnerable adults are alone or didn't have access to family during COVID, for example. Visitors, and so, you know, they can have a mechanism or a network to help protect them from these types of scams. So that is a distinct possibility.
And what do these scammers generally, what do they say? Have you heard many, have you ever been scammed yourself? Have you received one of these phone calls? I actually haven't. I've gotten a lot of texts. But I don't think I've actually received a phone call. Have you? And what do these scammers generally say? What do they sound like? What should we be looking out for?
Yeah, no. So that's a great question. No, I haven't personally been a target of one of these scams. But what we're seeing in Alaska is by far the largest category of these scams are what we call imposter scams, where the scammer contacts the victim and usually by telephone or texting, as you've mentioned, and pretends to be a government employer or a family member. Right now we're seeing an uptick in a scam where they're pretending to be from the Alaska unemployment offices, and they're reporting to you that you received an overpayment, right? And so and the scam is to get that overpayment back to the Alaska Unemployment Office or suffer some harsh penalty, losing your benefits, for example, or maybe even a criminal type threat of being sent to jail. Another one of the scams that we're seeing in Alaska right now is somebody pretending to be from the Social Security Administration or the U.S. Marshals Office or drug enforcement, and oftentimes they work hand in hand. So you'll get the call, it'll be somebody pretending to be from Social Security office, and then they're going to hand you off to a drug enforcement officer who will then try to scare the people or threaten them with jail or telling them they'll lose certain benefits that they're receiving if they don't comply with the instructions. Again, usually in like an overpayment or that type of scenario. You know, They tend to have a few things in common, though. There's some telltale signs. And so, you know, the three things that we would ask people to look for, if the caller is telling you that it requires immediate action, and when I say immediate action, I mean these scammers will often keep the person on the phone until they've actually gotten in the car, they're on the phone still all the way to the bank or to the money transfer place, and they're pulling it out. They stay on the phone with them the whole time because what they're trying to do is insulate those people from having contact with anyone else who could raise the red flag and say, we think this is a scam. They don't want the person to have time to call, for example, a sibling or one of their children saying, hey, this is what this person's asking me to do. Does this seem reasonable? So if it requires immediate action, likely a scam. If it's too good to be true or too bad to be true, likely a scam. And if it involves some sort of strange way of transferring the money, you know, gift cards, if they tell you to go down to the Target and get a bunch of gift cards and then read you the codes on the back, likely a scam, almost 100% probably a scam. And then wire transfers and then sending cash out in the mail. So any of those three things, and are all of those together, definitely a scam, but those are kind of the things that people can look out for and be educated on.
Okay, yeah. I mean, if someone calls me and tells me to go to the Target in Bethel, I'll know it's a scam.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. They're pretty sophisticated. So you sometimes, I'm sure there's some people listening to the radio station right now going, how can anybody fall for this type of thing? But they are very sophisticated operations. And, you know, if anybody's interested, there's a YouTube video that really sort of educated me on how sophisticated they are. It's I don't know, he's a popular YouTuber, Mark Robert, but he takes on a scammer in one of his videos, and it is amazing the level of sophistication and then how many people are involved in that single scam. So there'll be somebody in the U.S. receiving the funds, and that's transferred, then that gets transferred out overseas, and then that person, there's even people above them. So it's a very sophisticated business, and so just people need to be aware. And I think one of the main things listeners can do who are on the phone is just educate those that are vulnerable, any vulnerable adults, elderly that we know or caretakers for, just to kind of educate them on what the signs are, who they should call if they have questions, if they're being scammed, that type of thing, and just walk them through that so we can prevent it from occurring in the first place.
And a question that came up for me while I was listening to this is I wonder, do you have any notion that this will start to get even more sophisticated? Do you believe that scammers could sort of like learn, you know, what people can and can't fall for and develop even more skills? And then is this something that only happens over the phone, or is this something that can also happen in the mail system?
Yeah, no, this can happen through the phone, online, through the mail, any number of levels. It could be you walking out of a department store and being approached by someone. So this can happen in any format. And it is, it's an evolving thing. Like what the scammers, you know, they what they learn works is they'll continue to do that until it doesn't work anymore, until the scam gets well known. Particularly, you need to be be watchful is in some type of disaster scenario, like COVID, for example, gave a scammer again, talking about COVID or getting the vaccine or any way taking a disaster. We saw an uptick in scams after the earthquake that we had several years ago that was fairly bad in the Anchorage area. All those types of things are just easy ways for scammers to make headway and create new scams to steal money from again our vulnerable population.
So this all sounds pretty scary. If someone has received a strange phone call or a strange letter, or something that they just are not sure really if it came from a government agency or if it came from a legitimate source or if it came from a scammer. I know that this bill has created more education and potentially an office to help people deal with that, but what can they do now if they've received a letter like that?
I would think that one of the things they could do is contact law enforcement. Another thing that they could do is contact somebody they trust to kind of walk them through what's going on. That would be a very good way to prevent most of these scams. If it's a call from, for example, your credit card company, another way to combat that is to say, okay, I'll call you back, and hang up, call the number on the back of the credit card, for example, and then know that you're actually talking with somebody from the credit card company instead of someone just claiming they are. So there's all these various ways in which you can sort of verify whether or not you're being scammed or not. But again, what the scammer's job is they're trying to get you to do something quickly before you have really time to think about it, and they play off of fear. There's some type of bad thing that's going to happen to you, or if you don't comply quickly. And so I think most people, if they slow down and they think about it and they take those steps that we just talked about, they're going to be just fine.
And we just have a couple of minutes left, so I'd like to talk about this is a piece of federal legislation. What has movement been in Congress, and what's going on with it now?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So it passed through the House, 396 yeas to 13 nays, which is just shows you how kind of a bipartisan issue this is and how big of a problem it has become. And I expect that it'll get broad support in the Senate as well. It's got industry support. Like I said, when we first got on, there's 47 state attorneys general supporting this. Industry such as, you know, AARP, Retain Industry Leaders Association, Target, Best Buy, Walmart, Western Union, and the list goes on and on about, the people in the retail, arena or in financial services that support, this legislation. So I think with this type of support, I expect that its chances of passing through the Senate are pretty good.
All right. Well, excellent. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Attorney General Taylor. And back to you, Grady.
Thank you. That was Attorney General Taylor and our own Olivia Eberts.